it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck joins us now. Tim, we had one really exciting down-to-the-wire nail-biter game, and then we had a total snooze-fest of a game on Sunday and Championship Sunday. Your thoughts on the game of the weekend, the officiating, so on and so forth.
So the dud of the games, that I can't remember a championship game being worse than that game. I mean, maybe there was, but to think that we ended up in a scenario where literally we had an entire quarter where the Niners had a quarterback that couldn't throw the football more than 5 yards. I mean, to me, that was, I think, just shocking that we kind of found ourselves in that situation. And then to get the news that we have now of Brock Purdy's injury, to be honest, I'm just kind of devastated for him. I thought how he played this year, I thought there would be a really good shot that he's their quarterback next year. Now I think with that injury, we don't know, you know, when he will be back. If he does come back, if he'll ever be the same. And then honestly, like what that means for him in San Francisco or just even in the league in general. So that's kind of overarching theme there for the Niners and what that game was like. And then, in the other game, I think the big surprise for me was the way Cincinnati's offensive line dominated against the Buffalo Bills, but then had all kinds of issues against Kansas City on the road. They certainly did not play nearly as well as they played the week prior. And then Patrick Mahomes, like, I don't know what else you can say in terms of, you know, knowing that he was limited, but then to play the way he played, you know, I think just in terms of, like, competitive performance, toughness, all of that stuff, like, to me, I don't know that I've seen a better performance out of somebody kind of with an awareness of what they're dealing with physically in terms of that ankle injury. And then the scramble at the end of the game, all of that. Like, I was glad that we at least got a competitive good one for that second game of championship weekend.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. And to your point, and that was a superhero performance from Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Considering the injury, considering that they traded away his top receiver in Tyreek Hill, and then Patrick Mahomes led them back to the Super Bowl, I don't think it's something that can go ignored. So I don't want to take Patrick Mahomes' performance away from that game. But I did feel like the officiating was very anti-Bengal. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the NFL has an officiating problem?
Yeah, I think the NFL has an officiating problem in that, you know, I think that it's not great, right? So you just look at a couple calls in that game. You know, the reach for the first down and then the ball gets pulled back. Like, that's not forward progress. You know, that's not extending the football over the goal line. So, like, that play there made no sense to me whatsoever. Now, I do think that, you know, when they I guess that sequence where it feels like, hey, you know, they got a fifth down, you know, when you saw the all 22 look, there clearly was an official that was coming out to stop the play. There was a clock management issue by the officiating crew. So, you know, was that anti-Bengals? I think the net result, you know, was bad for the Bengals. You know, I guess I would just say this to you, Caroline, in terms of that. I think when it can be viewed as anti-Cincinnati, especially with, you know, some of the decisions were made after the canceled game, you know, Bengals-Bills that were bad for Cincinnati. I think it ultimately, if you want to make it a, hey, this is rigged kind of conversation, I think you can provide a lot of this corroborating evidence, if you will, to make it be so. Now, I don't think that it's as blatant as that. I think we just have inconsistencies in officiating. I think we see a bad job in officiating, and I think when you want to make it fit that, I think it's very easy to do so. you know, I think you can also look at, I mean, look at the hit on Josh Johnson in the other football game. Like, that's not roughing the quarterback. Or think about the fumble or incomplete pass, you know, from Josh Allen versus the Josh Dobbs, hey, that's a fumble play. Like, I just think it's inconsistent. It's bad. And because of that, yes, I would say that I agree with you. There is an officiating problem.
Now, Tim, I'm going to take this just a detour right here away from the AFC and NFC championship games. And I want to go to Josh Allen because all we hear about Josh Allen is how great he has been and how great he is and how elite he is. But to me, he's not in that sort of space or air, I believe, that a Patrick Mahomes is in, and even a Joe Burrow at this point. It almost reminiscent to me of a Philip Rivers deal, where when Philip was playing, he had to battle Tom Brady, he had to battle Peyton Manning and Ben Roethlisberger, and now you're sort of seeing that with Josh Allen, where he has to battle in the AFC. He has to battle Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, and he's fourth on that depth chart in regards to, you know, quarterbacks and what they're capable of doing. I just don't – when people talk about Josh Allen, it seems like they give him so much leeway, but he hasn't done anything, you know, that would require me, at least me, to put him in the same breath as a Mahomes or even a Burrow. He gets into these situations in the playoffs, and he always finds something, you know, he always does something that loses the game for his team. That's just me.
Yeah. Yeah, see, like, I think I would disagree with you, D. Mason. Mm-hmm. I think, and here's why I say that. It's like, look at Patrick Mahomes. He goes to throw the football, and it falls out of his hand, mm-hmm. you know, and he turns it over. And you're like, you know, other guys make that mistake, and it's like, yeah, see, guy chokes. And I think when it comes down to, you know, guys winning and losing these games, we just have, for whatever reason, made it be like it's only about, you know, the quarterback. And it's like, well, look, I mean, how about Chris Jones making a play at the end of the half, you know, to hold Cincinnati to 3 rather than, you know, scoring a touchdown? Or, like, I just think that I think there's good fortune associated with winning and losing these games at these points. I actually believe that there are multiple quarterbacks that are like same level, right? So Burrow, Mahomes, I would put Josh Allen in that level. And I think what ends up separating them is the teams that they're on, like somebody steps up and makes a play. And, you know, like, and when guys do that, like, you know, ultimately what happens, their team wins, and then we say, like, all right, we start building, like, this narrative. Like, I really feel like that's it. Like, I think that I just – and then I think kind of what can happen if it happens, you know, in a repetitive nature, right? So it's more than just one game or one situation, right? So take Josh Allen, for example. So he has a game against Kansas City last year where, like, they never get the ball back. So is that, like, did Josh Allen fail? Like, no, I don't think he did. Then we get the game, you know, last weekend in Buffalo. And, look, the reality is the Bills' defense had no answer for Cincinnati. Cincinnati dominated them up front. Like, is that Josh Allen? Like, I just don't think that it is. Now, it starts to build a narrative on it, and it also, I think, starts to create doubt on a football team, which I think can be, you know, kind of a hurdle to overcome for the team in general from a culture perspective in the future. But that's why I just wouldn't, like, separate Allen from Mahomes or anything like that.
But isn't that the same thing we did with Philip Rivers? You know, he never won. As great as Philip Rivers was, he would never be compared to Manning. He would definitely never be compared to Tom. Hell, they won't even compare him to Drew Brees, and Drew Brees only won one championship. That's because why? Yep. He couldn't get his team to a Super Bowl. He couldn't get past the AFC championship game. And it seems like, to me, until Buffalo does something, I think, a lot with their defense and they get a legitimate running game, he's going to be Philip Rivers.
Yeah, no, listen, I think that, but think about what you just said, like, uh-huh. like, what does he need? He needs a defense that can close the game. That's why exactly. They went and got Von Miller. When they didn't have him, they couldn't close games. They need, like, hey, we need to run the ball as well. Like, look, we can talk about Ben Roethlisberger all we want, but, like, listen, they were running the ball with Jerome Bettis. Like, I think back to Roethlisberger's first Super Bowl, like, they took the game out of his hands. It was Antoine Randall-El on a reverse pass that changes everything. Look, heck, for Peyton Manning, remember? Look, Peyton, like, that was the knock on Peyton for a while. But can they do it then? And
can't get past the Patriots.
No, and then, like, if you look at some of the things that happened, it's like, well, look, you got Rex Grossman, whoever, you know, in a Super Bowl, and you know, like that's what happened there. And then look, Drew Brees. Like, look, if Hank Baskett can recover a surprise onside kick that hits him in the chest, like, do they win one? Like, so I just think that, like, I think the guys that are really good get you into the dance. I do. And then obviously there's some other guys that make it because their teams are good and some good fortune and whatever. But then I think a lot of these guys, it's like, you know what, everything else, it's still a dependent position. Mm-hmm. It's one guy on a roster of 53. And is it important? Sure. But look, Malcolm Butler needs to make a great play on an interception. You know, Asante Samuel or David Tyree needs to make an amazing catch on his helmet. Like, I don't know. I think, listen, I love giving guys credit for being amazing at the position. But, oh, man, I think
a lot has to happen.
Too much credit, too much blame.
And I've always said that, Tim. Sometimes a quarterback gets too much praise, and sometimes he gets too much of the blame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where I am on Josh Allen with it.
Tim Hasselbeck will stick around with us coming up next. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Our second segment with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN, talking NFL here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, The Game. All right, so Tim, I'm not saying this because you're a member of the quarterback fraternity, and perhaps this could have extended your career. You could still be there if this rule were intact as the designated third quarterback. But why did they go away from designating three quarterbacks? That should never happen, I don't think. It would be such a simple thing to correct, but what happened in the championship game was sad, where you got Christian McCaffrey trying to put the helmet on with the signal in there. He's trying to switch it around. He's handing one helmet to one guy, trying to get it fixed the other way. Then he's trying to throw a pass. That was so pitiful that they had to resort to that. Why not have three quarterbacks designated every NFL game?
Yeah, so there have been a few iterations of it, but, like, to kind of address what you're talking about, there was a point. So, like, just go back, 53-man rosters, you can have 46 active on game day. So you got 53 guys on your team, 46 of them can be in uniform and on the sideline and available to enter a football game, which means, you know, you used to have, like, another seven guys, you know, that were – you know, on your football team, maybe they were like the ninth lineman, you know, offensive lineman or something, and they just weren't in uniform. And typically, like, you have guys that are banged up and maybe aren't healthy enough to play. And so, you know, those are some of the players that, you know, aren't in uniform. Well, there used to be a scenario where you could have a quarterback in uniform, and he actually was inactive, but he was available to play,
right,
because he would be your emergency third. So if you found yourself in a scenario where, you know, starter gets hurt, backup gets knocked out of the game, you did not have to put some, you know, random player who's never practiced at the position out there, and that was, you could then make him active at that point. I have no earthly idea why they got rid of it. I really don't. And, you know, the league has kind of adjusted roster sizes as they've played more games. They roster sizes and practice squads have gotten bigger. You know, there have been scenarios where you can now, you know, have injured reserve designated to return after a certain period of time. Truth be told, I believe that it's a kind of a cost cutting measure for the league, because, you know, a lot of times teams were ending up just carrying two quarterbacks with the feeling that, hey, look, if we get past our number two quarterback, you know, the chances of us having a third quarterback that's going to help us win the football game are slim anyway. I'd rather have that extra defensive back available because I've got one that's nursing an ankle and I want to have him ready to play. But I think the better scenario would be is to have the third emergency third quarterback, you know, kind of available.
Yes.
And have it be somebody, by the way, that actually plays the position. And
yes. Not a running back.
Yeah. And so,
or a punter.
Correct. And look, I think that teams could then get creative with it with, you know, a Taysom Hill type player, you know, or a Trace McSorley type of player. And I think that actually would be good for the league as well.
Yes, and you could develop. You could use this as a developmental spot on your roster, which is where Malik Willis should have been.
Yeah, hey, Willis is a perfect example of a guy that could get run out of the league because he's not ready to be a quarterback, okay? But if you said, all right, look, you can have two quarterbacks. You can have Tannehill and Josh Dobbs ready to play, but you also have this third quarterback that you could use in other ways. You know, maybe he's your personal protector on the punt team, and that gives you some ability, you know, to have him as a runner. Maybe you can use him if you're thin at receiver, or you, there's something that you can do. And by the way, it prevents, you know, a horrible scenario where you literally don't really have somebody that quote unquote can, like, you know, can play the position or take snaps that can go in there. So, yeah, I think if you're the league, you mandate it because you can't have what happened. You really shouldn't have something like that happen in a regular season game, much less a conference championship game.
Agreed. We last talked to you, we were hitting the offensive coordinator carousel. It's interesting how quick it can happen with Kellen Moore getting let go one day, and then literally 24 to 48 hours later, he has a new job with the Chargers. They have a pretty talented quarterback. Pretty interesting move. And so there's been no talk, no movement on the Titans opening. Are you hearing anything there?
Yeah, so here's what I'd say on the Kellen Moore thing, and I know that no one would ever admit that this is the case. I mean, I think that's kind of one of these things that was like, I mean, did they happen simultaneously? I mean, like, I guess not trying to be, you know, the skeptical guy in this, but like.
Right, but obviously there was some groundwork laid somewhere.
It was like, hey, here's the deal. Get me out of here, and I've got my landing spot. I mean, that's like, that's the case. That's what happened there. I mean, and truthfully, like, are you firing your offensive coordinator without knowing that you're going to ultimately end up with Kellen Moore? Like, I think if you could get phone records, I think you'd see how that went down. And so in regards to, I think I said this to you guys maybe before it became, I don't know, maybe before it was public, like, I think it's Matt Nagy. And I think the only reason that it's not already Matt Nagy is because the Chiefs are still playing. Like, now, I don't know that. I'm not reporting that. That's just what I feel has happened. And so I think that's to me, if Kansas City weren't still playing, I feel like it would have been done by now.
So you're saying it's no rush because he feels like he could, and they're not rushing him. They don't have to have an interview this week while they have the bye week, per se.
Yeah, and I think it's one of these things where it's like, we're not going to go hire someone else because, look, Matt Nagy's not rumored to be getting one of these head coaching jobs that's open. We feel like it's pretty good that it's happening here. And so ultimately, we're just not announcing it now. It's distracting to the Chiefs. Really doesn't matter if we announce it now or we announce it later. Or we officially decide later. I feel like it's Matt Nagy. So, and like, there are obviously other things that need to happen, you know, in terms of, you know, maybe they're interviewing other candidates and it fulfills requirements. Like, I I'm not reporting anything. Like, you're saying, like, hey, what's my sense? What's my feel? My feel is that it's Matt Nagy, that it's decided. We'll go through some of these, you know, exercises along the way here, but ultimately I think he's the offensive coordinator.
Which deal you believe happens first? Derek Carr out of Las Vegas or Aaron Rodgers out of Green Bay? Or do you think they'll push more so the Aaron Rodgers well into the offseason?
I think they both get pushed a little bit. Now, the roster bonus scenario for Carr, I think essentially, and then I don't know how they get out of it, but basically a few days after the Super Bowl, next year is guaranteed, I believe, right? And potentially some of, so say 2023 salary is guaranteed, and I think it's $33 million. And I want to say maybe 24 is guaranteed as well at like $7 million. So I believe that you are basically committing to him at a minimum $33 million if he is on your roster come, you know, mid to late February. So my guess is something happens there. Now, can something happen where there's a trade and somebody else pays some of that? Maybe so. But I would guess that kind of forces things where Aaron Rodgers, you know, all of his money kind of comes later. And I think that he's probably going to start to look at places that are better opportunities for him. So I would say that Rodgers happens later.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Last one for you, Tim. Kind of a three-parter. Where is Tom Brady next year? Where is Aaron Rodgers next year? And where is Trey Lance next year?
Oh, wow. This is an essay question, Tim. Are you prepared for this?
I expect a thesis as well, Tim.
So I would say...
What is your hypothesis?
So if I had to... So I'm guessing on all these. All right, so the easiest way for me to do that would be to try to put guys in other places. I would say this. I would put Rodgers and Brady in Vegas and San Francisco. And, you know, I guess what order, if I had to choose, you know, I guess I would put Rodgers in San Francisco and Brady in Las Vegas. And then, you know, I don't think that means Lance has to be somewhere else. So I think Lance could still be in San Fran. So like that would be my first option, but then to put him somewhere else, Carolina, you know, maybe, is where I would put him. But I think that the more likely scenario is that Lance is still in San Francisco, but I would put Brady in Las Vegas and Aaron in San Francisco.
Essay, very well executed. Thank
nice.
You, Tim.
You get A+.
A+.
A+? That's the only A+ I've ever received.
ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck with us. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, see you guys.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Tim. Coming up next, a little bit of Titans news. Is that going to solve the Titans' problems? We'll get into that coming up next. And, of course, your phone, 615-737-1025. It's Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, The Game. And, hey, it is Love Week on 1025-1063, The Game. I don't know what that means, but it sounds nice. Brought to you by Moments Peace Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs. Tune into Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 a.m. for details on how you could win a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Day Salon and Day Spa in Cool Springs and qualify for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card.
Get it for your honey dip.
Yeah, if a certain someone, a certain significant other of mine is listening, I do like diamonds.
I do like
diamonds.
Your honey dip loves diamonds, so you better get it for
$1,000.
Pretty nice. Pretty good penny. So a little bit of news coming out from the Tennessee Titans today that the Titans are switching to a turf field at Nissan Stadium in 2023. And you might be telling yourself, why the heck do I care about that? I don't play on that field. Why would I care? I think the explanation as to why the Titans are moving forward with the turf field and abandoning the real grass is the interesting part to me. This is an excerpt from the article that the Tennessee Titans put out. And Mike Vrabel said, there is nothing more important than the health and safety of our players. We've had a lot of issues with the grass at Nissan Stadium after a certain part of the season. It's hard to grow grass. It gets slick. We put new turf down. We try and put new sod down. It's slick. You see guys slipping. Those are real things that I've witnessed over my time here. Our grass surface is not on the level of some of the other grass surfaces across the NFL. At the beginning of the year, summer, training camp, early season, I can see it being very consistent. But as the season wears on and the weather changes, there is a noticeable difference in the performance on the field. Now, I get that. I understand that. It's gross and rainy now versus August, September. It's beautiful and sunny. But I think the interesting thing here is, are they blaming the injuries on the grass?
It certainly looks like they are presenting that as a possible reason why they've had a rash of injuries the last couple of years. They don't really spell it out that way, and there's no real detail to sort of prove. And I don't know that it's something that could be proved, but they do say in here that because of the, this is a direct quote, and this is not from Rabel, but this is in the release, because of the inconsistent, undependable grass surface, the Titans have seen a number of injuries take place at Nissan Stadium. Here's the number. Here's the stat they're throwing out there. During the 2018 to 2021 seasons, and I just lost my place. I just got a video of Mike Keith that just popped up on my screen while I did that.
Nissan Stadium
yeah, consistently had amongst the highest lower body injuries of any stadium across the league. Now, that's all it says. There's not, hey, click for the study here. Here's what our research shows. Here are the numbers. They have nothing like that. But they throw that out there as if they've done some research on it, and I'll take their word for it. But the question is that, why is this the first we're hearing about this?
Yeah,
now,
if this
now,
study's
I will say,
2018
to 2021, so they've tracked it back. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is for both teams and not just
the Titans.
Yeah, it can't
be just for the Titans.
So that does sort of go against the general thought of when you play on grass, it's safer than playing on artificial surface. Right?
But, okay.
We've all sort of taken that to be the general consensus.
And
right?
I would rather play on grass than field turf. But, okay, again, I can see why they would want artificial turf or, you know, synthetic grass. I understand why. Because as good as the groundskeepers are, and they've been excellent over at the Titans facility, the way they have that practice field every day, the time that they put in, I've sat there and watched them when
we do those
exactly,
shows.
They're absolutely
wonderful.
We get hit by the grass clippings
they're
as soon as practice
there,
is over.
They're
yeah.
out there immediately, and they're doing. And I'm sure that's the same thing that they're doing over at the playing surface at Nissan Stadium. But once you get past a certain point of the year, because of the weather, it rains more in the wintertime than anything here in Nashville. It's hard, you know, trying to, you know, get that grass back to playing condition after you've probably had a bowl game or, you know, TSU plays on it, and then the Titans got to play on it. You have a concert, and then the next week or two, then you got to play on it. They change the side in and out. I'm sure as good as they are, it's a task for them just to get it, you know, back ready, you know, halfway ready on a Sunday. So going to, you know, field turf would be great, you know, for this team because, you know, in the months, and you said it, Willie, you know, late November, December into January, they don't have to worry about repainting the grass or throwing new sod on.
Yeah,
you
which
have
they've
the field
done.
Turf, which they've done since I was there.
There's no question. There was a famous, just to give a little history, and Derek, you were playing in this game. There was a Monday night football game that John Madden was doing, and I forget exactly.
I think was it the Cowboys or?
No, it was the Patriots. It
was
Tom Brady
Patriots?
And the Patriots. It was a great win for the Titans. Mm-hmm. It was 2002, I think. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the year, the field just looked awful. Mm-hmm. It was painted. There was a lot of strange green paint. It was November or December. It was sloppy. It was green stuff getting all over everybody's uniforms.
Went from white to green.
Yeah, and of course, with that kind of audience, two very good teams. You guys ended up in the AFC Championship game. It was actually a down year in the midst of the Tom Brady ascent, right? They had a good team, but it was a big loss. You guys handed them a big loss. But John Madden, during that game, said, this is a disgrace. Mm-hmm. This is not an NFL-level field that we're seeing here. And I did learn from the late, great Darrell Hammett. I don't know if you ever met Darrell. Like a Hall of Fame Arena Football League player for the Nashville Cats and several other teams. You know, ended up settling here in Nashville. I got to know him playing pickup basketball. Great guy. But he got his agronomy degree from Penn State. He's a graduate assistant coach for Joe Paterno once upon a time. But he said he studied this, and he said this is a transition zone. And I was like, Darrell, why can't they grow grass in there? He said, seriously, it's hard to do it in Nashville because of where it is. And they actually put that in the release here, the climate zone. It's a transition climate zone. So I knew this because of Darrell Hammond. May he rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
Passed away from Lou Gehrig's disease a few years ago. It was a very sad situation. But I remember, Darrell, I've learned this from you, the transition zone. I had no idea what that meant, but it is true. It's hard to grow grass. You notice a lot of the high school fields, if you have Bermuda grass, late in the season, it's brown grass. It just completely turns brown because it goes dormant. And then you have to try to figure it. High schools can't figure out how to switch grass like a golf course.
Right.
Good. So this is something they've been dealing with for a long time. But I think the Adams family always wanted to hold out and try everything they could to have a grass surface. But apparently they can't wait.
The Adams family. But I did learn a lot about Nashville grass over the summer whenever it was Treylon Burks' allergies gate about Nashville grass. But I think the interesting thing is, because I get it. I get the transition to turf in terms of upkeep and maintenance. It's so much easier. It's there, to your point about the concerts and the games every week. You get TSU playing on Saturdays. It is so much easier to upkeep. But the injuries
is a new thing. Yeah. I've never heard that.
Very strange. And one texter texts into the text line says, we should recall that Derrick Henry's injury occurred on artificial turf.
Mm-hmm. It was in
Indianapolis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they mentioned the lower body injuries. Well, I'll just go through the lower body injuries off the top of my head. Harold Landry tore his ACL in training camp, on the practice fields. Treylon Burks had turf toe, and that's, you know, that you can get that on grass, you can get that on turf, and it was in, where it wasn't here.
I don't think it happened here. Let's put that
wherever
to the
side. It was. Ryan Tannehill's lower, his ankle injury.
Somebody fell
on him. That wasn't due to grass.
I don't think so.
Jeffrey Simmons fell on him. Yeah.
Bud Dupree had a hip issue, but I don't know if I could attribute that necessarily to grass.
Yeah, I would, again, love to see more. They've clearly, at least they give the appearance that they've done some studying on this.
Right.
Now, Mike Vrabel's stuff seems to be what we would call anecdotal, right? Observation. This is just what he sees. But he seems to be talking more about the footing. And I get that.
He's talking about guys slipping.
That's a different guy. Guys slipping. They put the new sod down because the old grass is just not kept up.
So and he's right. Guys were slipping in games.
And I do think that happens. I've seen that happen many times at that field over the years. So this makes a lot of sense. But the injury thing is very puzzling. Is that something they needed to sell to ownership?
Are you talking about other teams coming in here and getting injured?
I've never heard that.
I've never heard that
either.
No. Were they injured before they got to this field and then there's so much.
I'd just love to know the studies. I'm not questioning it, but I'd love to see more.
They're vague in describing. You know, they're just saying lower body injuries. Mm-hmm. Well, what lower body injuries are you talking? Obviously, you did a study. What specific players? Because you did it on specific players. So what players had injuries that you are contributing to this field? Vrabel's right. The slipping, there was a lot of slipping toward the end of the season. That was both with the Titans or whoever they played. And it had nothing necessarily to do with their shoe, whether you had screw ins or molded bottoms. If the grass is slick, you're gonna slide regardless of the situation. But are you when you say injuries, obviously you did the work so you can – tell us specifically which guys were injured, or you can give us a number, you know, like it was number 45, they got injured because. But this right here is just vague. I can go more so, I'm in more of agreement with Mike Vrabel than I am with the injury thing, because it doesn't seem like this surface has yielded a lot of lower body injuries from 2018 to now. It just doesn't seem that way.
And since injuries were such a massive problem plaguing this team, how is turf going to fix that. Mm-hmm. Because I'm under the interpretation, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that turf is more conducive to injuries than natural grass might be.
Because it doesn't give as much.
ACL injuries, mm-hmm. where you get stuck in the turf. Look at Odell Beckham Jr. at SoFi in the Super Bowl. I mean, I think it's interesting. And we have one texter text in the text line, and I want to get your thoughts on mm-hmm. it, D-Mace, as a former player, and how your mindset shifts and turf, grass, and how this impacts the team moving forward. We'll get into that. And, of course, your phones. Everything's on the table. Titans, new fields, quarterback carousel, everything's on the table. 615-737-1025. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 106 through the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Now, the Titans have just released that starting in 2023, Nissan Stadium will switch to an artificial turf field. Now, this is important because you know, the Titans lay out exactly why they're doing this in terms of maintenance, in terms of, you know, player safety. But in terms of player safety, what exactly is it about turf that makes it's safer for players? Because Mike Vrabel cites the injuries. The article cites the injuries that have occurred at Nissan Stadium and point back to the field being the reason why. But D-Mace, you've played on grass. Mm-hmm. You've played on turf. As a former player, what does this mean to you?
The way I looked at it was, you know, once you're out there playing, you know, especially now, when I first got in the league, in 97, they were still making that transition. They just had started making that transition from that old, you know, turf that or rug
carpet.
That you would have in your house. They started making a transition from that because it was real bad.
Ow.
Yeah, it was bad. To more of this synthetic grass, this field turf. And once guys got used to it, it was great to play on it at times, but then at other times, it wasn't. Like, if you already had an existing injury, a lower body injury, ankle or something, you didn't want to play on field turf because it just stuck. You know, you had to really pay attention as a receiver, more importantly as a receiver. If you got an ankle injury, you know, at least grass gives a little bit. And if you get tackled, your foot doesn't get stuck in the ground, whereas the field turf, there's a possibility that, you know, that cleat gets stuck in the ground and you end up, you know, hurting or making your injury a little bit worse. But I always, you know, not always, at times I did sort of, you know, fear a potential, you know, knee injury because of the field turf. But
did you think about that more with turf than you did with that?
Yeah, I thought about it more with turf than anything. One thing I did, I hated playing on turf sort of in the wintertime. Because it just seemed, well, in the summertime, because it would get so hot, that turf would get so hot, and grass seemed to be a little bit cooler in a sense. But in the wintertime, you know, it was great, you know, in the wintertime, and especially during weather games, well, whether it be rain or snow, you were able to keep your footing a little bit better on the field turf than you were, obviously, on the grass. So, you know, I played 8 years on grass here in Nashville, and then 6 years I played on field turf in Baltimore. Lucky for me, you know, my only high ankle sprain happened on grass here in Nashville. It didn't happen on turf. So I was fortunate enough to go, you know, 15 years without having any major injuries. Hell, I tore my meniscus on grass and not turf, you know. But that was in practice. So, you know, it goes either way. You know, some guys love playing on field turf and don't mind it. Some guys hate it because of the burns you get. And it does put sort of a extra beating on your body. For whatever reason, you feel a little bit more sore after a turf game than you do after being on grass. At least me. Huh. At least me. I can't speak for everybody else, but at least me. But eventually, I got used to it, and it was what it was. But if you ask me what would I prefer, I would prefer natural grass. But natural grass in Florida is different from natural grass in Nashville or natural grass in Green Bay or some other place like that.
Another obvious here, away from the football part, but it does give you the ability now if when you put this in. And they want this in for next year. So it just seems like the injury thing to me is being used to sort of put it over the top. You know, the new stadium, they've already said, is going to have turf. So it's going to be a dome stadium, going to have turf, artificial. So I think Mike Vrabel is like, look, let's just go ahead and do it here. And now for the next few years, while that stadium's still going, you can have any number of events now. It's a lot easier. You could have high school games on Friday. It's not a concern anymore to do all of the work to get TSU ready for their game on Saturday and then get the field back ready to go for the next Titans game, sometimes on consecutive days, right? That's a lot for any surface, let alone one in the transition zone that we talked about here. But for all these years they've done it, TSU's always played there. The bowl game's always been there since the stadium opened. So why now? Well, I guess the injury thing is what they're using to sort of justify the expense. And it does, you do have to drop the check, right? It's expensive in the moment to buy the turf. And they've got the company.
Well, you
got to
maintain it too.
Yeah. And and there's a lot less maintenance. And after a while, it will wear down. But this, I'm guessing, will be the last surface. Like you, they always say it lasts 10 years, right? That's what they justified. Neil O'Donnell, your former teammate, sells this field turf. He's been an employee for a long time. And what they say is every 10 years, you should get a new one. But in that 10 years, it's going to cost you less than it will cost you to upkeep your grass, right? And a lot less daily stuff. It will wear down over time. But you're only going to get, what, 3-4 years maximum?
Is there anything stopping them from moving it to the new stadium?
I don't know if it could be picked up and taken to another place. That's a great question. I don't know.
Probably can.
Maybe you could. I don't know.
I know at State Farm in Arizona, they have real grass in the arena, and they pick it up and roll it out.
Right. They do that
in the sun, water it.
They did it in Houston, too.
Yes.
They did it in Houston where after the game, if they didn't have like a they had like 2 weeks where they were removed from the stadium because they were on pallets.
Right.
They would take the pallets out, put them in a parking lot, and then so it can get the sun and everything else, water it, and then they would put it back in the stadium.
Right. But the modern artificial surface, can that be moved from one to another? That's a good question. Maybe you can.
But sometimes you just, man, playing on grass, you just like to get that dirt on you. Just like that. You like to walk out the stadium feeling like, you know, you played a game.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing with baseball.
I have to wash my jersey.
Yeah. Baseball, more and more surfaces. It's so much easier to play these tournaments with rain and everything. Vanderbilt has done it. You know, they play on turf. A lot of the SEC baseball stadiums have gone to turf. It's so much more convenient. You don't have to roll the tarp out and do all that. Golly, that used to be a nightmare because the players had to do that when I was playing at Vanderbilt. Oh, you get the call at 8 a.m. in the morning. You got to come down here and get the tarp on the field. It might rain today. Oh, no. I mean, the college student having to get up at 7 or 8 in the morning, that's just
Travesty.
That's a no bueno situation.
Not.
So it does save a lot of time and energy. And so a lot of youth fields to run these tournaments where you got games played all day. You get behind if it rains. You don't have people to, you know, take care of the field. So it's going surface. But like you said, you don't come home and have the slide, you know, the dirt on your pants. Mom, look at this. Oh, hey, son, you must have done well today. You're all dirty. That's good, right? You're on base. You were sliding. Now you don't know.
And I do understand the move logistically. Mm-hmm. I understand in terms of maintenance, in terms of cost, in terms of concerts and other games and events that could be held at Nissan Stadium. All those things make a total perfect sense to me. My only question is, how in the world does this help with injuries? Someone texting the text line says, this is taken straight from Google. Specifically, players have a 28% higher rate of non-contact lower extremity injuries when playing on artificial turf. Of those non-contact injuries, players have a 32% higher rate of non-contact knee injuries, probably ACLs, on turf, and a staggering 69% higher rate of non-contact foot and ankle injuries on turf compared to grass. So I don't know if this is just coming from a texture. I didn't do my own due diligence. I don't know when that was updated. I don't know if this fancy pants, whatever they're calling it, you know, micro, whatever, whoever, I don't know, I can't find what it's called, kind of turf is going to be different in Nissan Stadium. But it does feel like, to me, the injuries almost feel like a scapegoat to just get the turf in there. And it's like, yeah, you know, we've been struggling with injuries, so that'll help.
Well, you can take, you know, you can do a study and you can gear whatever study you're doing to however you want it to come out to be. Like, you can do enough study. If you want something changed, you can do a study long enough so the numbers can come back to your side to say, okay, let's do it.
For example, why is it 2018 to 2021?
Exactly.
Mike Vrabel got there in 2017, right? So it's not just since Vrabel's been there.
But the last 2 or 3 years, they've had these
maybe the numbers look better if you go 2018.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Because the grass, it's been the issue. It's been grass since 1999. So what about since 1999?
Yeah. And I don't know. Did the matrix helix fibers with a corkscrew shape that this turf is going to have, is that what was born in 2018? And so now they're looking at the more updated turf?
I don't know.
I don't know the answer to
that. So in order
to
play on that matrix turf, do I got to take the red pill or the blue pill?
Ooh, that's a good question.
The two-tone blue pill.
Exactly.
Let's call up Keanu Reeves. Call up Lawrence Fishburne. Let's get a study on that.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to go back into your phones, your calls, your texts. We've been neglecting them, so I promise we'll get into them. But coming up next, looking at what we saw over this past weekend, how does that compare to the Titans? And what's the timeline for the Titans to get back in that conversation? We'll get into all of that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, the game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.